Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 204.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now, for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today.
Are you going through menopause or perimenopause? It can be a struggle to find comfort in your body with night sweats, hot flashes, and so many other uncomfortable symptoms. Hormone Harmony is a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause, created by Happy Mammoth. They are dedicated to making women's lives easier using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout women's lives. So Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalances can take it, but it's perfect for those horrible menopause symptoms that put a woman's life on hold. Hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep and feeling tired all the time. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code CHAT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code CHAT for 15% off today.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. Today, I am very happy to be bringing you an interview with a guest who is going to talk with us about a topic that is very important, self-kindness. I've been out of the office for a couple weeks. I've had a lot of chaos happening in my life over the past couple months, as I've kind of alluded to here a little bit. I'm glad to be back and bringing you more new episodes. And I'm very excited about what's coming up for the rest of the year. I'm also looking for sponsors for 2020. So if you know of a service or product that you think would be a good one to have as a sponsor for Therapy Chat, I would love to hear from you about what that is by sending me an email at therapychat.podcast@gmail.com. In the meantime, let's go ahead and dive into my interview with Jane Tornatore. Therapy Chat Podcast wouldn't exist without the support of its listeners. If you'd like to become a member, please go to patreon.com/therapychat. By making a $1 per month donation, you can help Therapy Chat keep going over the long haul. Thank you for your support. Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and I am very much looking forward to talking with my guest, Dr. Jane Tornatore. Jane, thanks so much for being my guest on Therapy Chat today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. I am very curious to hear about your work. You recently released a book called Everything is Perfect, Just Not Me, A Roadmap for Self-Acceptance.
Yes.
And, you know, that theme of perfectionism that is such a huge issue in our culture, the U.S.
Yes, it is.
And I think people are hearing about it, but really wondering how to change it. You know, it's like, okay, I get it. I'm a perfectionist, but what do I do?
Right. And it has to be the right tool, and we have to do it just right.
They need to do all the research. We need to right. do all the research on perfectionism and then don't implement anything. That's
exactly.
That's how it goes.
Yep, that's pretty much it.
Speaking from experience, yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. So let's just, before we even dig into talking more about your book, if you could just share a little bit about yourself and your work for our audience.
Okay. Yeah, I am what I term a recovering perfectionist. Mm-hmm. And those are most of the people who come into my office. And I've spent so much of my life, and I learned it from my family and from people around me, that the best way to be the best person I could be is to beat myself up into being a good person. And probably somewhere in my 40s, I was like, I don't think that's working.
Yeah.
I was working really hard and, you know, doing my best, but in my own mind, I sucked all the time. I was never doing it good enough. So, and I realized as I was training to be a therapist, I was like, you know, how am I going to teach people to love themselves and to appreciate themselves and to like themselves and be kind to themselves if I've got this committee in my head constantly telling me how I'm doing it wrong or I should have done it already or why even try because it's not going to be perfect and it's not going to work because you should have done it already and so you might as well give up. But you can't give up because that means you're a bad person.
Don't be a quitter.
Don't be a quitter. And so you just got a view onto the inside of my head. And I'm like, I can't be the only one experiencing this. So through work with myself and, you know, all the learning I've done, because I am a perfectionist, so you have to learn a lot, do lots of courses and books and, you know, PhDs. But what I found is that these simple tools are the most profoundly effective. And as we were talking earlier, my theory is that, and especially as perfectionists, we want to make big changes and we want to make them, you know, 2 years ago. And so when anytime we make big changes, our ego freaks out. Because in my way of viewing it, our ego's job is to keep us safe. And for the ego, that means if we've done it before, if we've experienced it before, we know we're going to survive. So let's just keep it the same way because we know we've already lived through it. Whereas if we're doing something new, even if it's healthy, even if it's what we want, even if what we worked so long to get, it's still like, I don't know if I'm going to survive because I don't know what I'm doing. And I think especially as perfectionists, we can't try anything new until we already know how to do it, which is, you know.
That's a huge one.
Right? And it's impossible.
Right. It's like, I'm going to take up skiing, but I don't know how to ski. So I don't want to look like an idiot.
Right.
It's like, but what about the learning part? Like you have to learn it. So you don't just aren't born.
Right.
It skis on your feet and knowing how to do it.
Right. Exactly. So we have this beautiful, constant trail of failure into our little brains. So what I've discovered is that when I implement small changes and my clients implement small changes, actually after a time when they just practice these little things that sneak under the ego of like, well, that's not a big deal. Don't worry about that. That's not going to do anything. Just don't worry about that. That they start to make these changes where they find themselves being spontaneously kinder to themselves. And it's like it sneaks up on their ego until it's already, the neural pathways are already created. So then the ego's like, oh, well, I know this, we're fine. So that's my,
I like that.
It's my secret weapon for change.
So yes. In your book, is that what you teach people to do?
Yes. The last exercise is a big one that scares a lot of people, but I wanted to do one exercise that for people who really like to go for it can do. But the rest of them are just very simple ways to be aware, how to be with our feelings without them absolutely terrifying us or overwhelming us, how to shift our thoughts, like one word at a time. Like one of the things can I share one of the tools now?
Please, sure.
Awesome. So the way I always lead into this one is I say, if I were queen of the world, I would ban the words should, must, have to, need, and for Midwesterners, gotta. Mm-hmm. Because these words, especially should was my worst one. When I say, oh, I should do this, it has the brilliant ability to make me feel bad no matter what. Because if I should do it, that means it should have already been done. So even if I end up doing it, it's too late. I should have done it before. So I get no pleasure. I get no dopamine hit for what I accomplish. So I can't win with should. And when I'm working with people, I have them, you know, say I should do, you know, something that they, quote, think they should do, and then feel it in their, close their eyes and feel it in their body. And almost always they feel a sense of like dread or tightness or heaviness, or, you know, their brow scrunches up or their teeth clench or they get more tense. So, you know, just by saying the words, we make the task that we're wanting to do more difficult. So I would ban should, must, have to, need, and gotta, and I would switch it up to it's a good idea, it'd be helpful, an option is, I get to, and only if it's really, really true, I want to, or I like to. And then I always have people change up the should to it's a good idea, say it, close their eyes, and notice what they feel. And 99 out of 100 times, every once in a while, it doesn't work for people, but 99 out of 100 times, people go, oh, I feel lighter. I feel less tense. It seems more possible. And, you know, we've got 60,000 thoughts on average a day, according to some Harvard study that I've not been able to find yet, but I've seen it cited a bunch of times.
Or yeah, at least I've never heard that, but, you know, I'm like, there's been times I've been laying in bed.
Right.
And I know there were at least 20,000 thoughts that went through. So
exactly.
And that was so just an hour or so trying to fall asleep.
Feels like all your thoughts all in 1 hour.
Yeah.
And so you think if we've got an average of 60,000 thoughts, if we start to change the words we use to ourselves in those thoughts, it can have a profound impact, like one word at a time.
Yeah. I like this because something that I find really hard is when, you know, and I know this is a common thing, so I'm not putting it down, but I've never really found success for myself or with clients in trying to change thoughts. But right. You're saying change a word.
Word.
That's different.
Yes.
Yeah, because like trying to change yourself.
Yeah, changing your thoughts is it's awesome and it's great, but it's too much.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, when people have, for those of us with trauma, it's not really accessible when the trauma is activated.
Exactly. That neural pathway is a super highway and there is no getting, there are like no exit ramps when we're full on in the trauma response.
Yeah.
Yep.
I love also that you said that you ask people to notice what they feel in their bodies when they say should, gotta, have to, must. I didn't jot down the words, but those are the ones I think
need.
I remember.
I need to do this.
And also for me, one that you didn't say, but that I say in my head is supposed to. Well, I'm supposed to this. I'm supposed to that.
That's good. I like that.
Maybe it's more of an East Coast thing or the South. I'm not sure because I'm from Virginia. But there's like an element of self-criticism in those words.
Yep.
You know, absolutely. And to tune into what we feel in our body when we're saying that is so, that's the key to me.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Because then we actually because we don't basically as a species like change, when we see the results of the words that we use on ourselves and actually feel the discomfort and pain they cause, we're more likely to make the effort to make the change, because we become aware of like how awful it feels when we talk to ourselves in, you know, using words like should, must, have to, need, supposed to. It feels awful. So it's like, okay, so what were those words again? It'd be helpful. Okay, I'll try it. And also, you know, I always like to bring the ego along for the ride whenever possible. When we feel the results of the words in our body, it gives the ego information of like, oh, well, maybe that's not crazy. There is a difference when I use should versus it's a good idea. There is a difference. This might actually be a tool that works. And so our ego kind of comes along for the ride because it doesn't know how profoundly it will work. Otherwise, it'd be like, that's a stupid tool. Stop it.
No, I like them. I like my way.
Right, right. Stop it. You're supposed to just use it my way.
Right? That's right. That reminds me of the thing that Kristen Neff talks about in self-compassion, that we think that by being mean to ourselves, that we're motivating. And if we don't do it, we're afraid we'll be lazy.
Exactly. I remember when I was in grad school and I was super depressed and anxious, and half of my colleagues and I were on like anti-anxiety or antidepressants. I was in to see a psychiatrist to get a medication, and he said, so when do you play? When do you have fun? And I'm like, what? He said, well, when do you have fun? I was like, I don't. I'm in grad school. I work all the time.
I'm serious. I'm a PhD student.
Exactly. There is no fun. And then he was pushing me, and I was like, you don't understand. If I allow myself to have any fun, I'm not going to finish grad school. If I have any fun, I'm going to know how fun it is, and I will stop working completely. You know, like this all or nothing, yes, that is part of perfectionism. And so he's like, okay, so trust me. For you, if you feel like you're going off the boards with having fun, for most people, that's like, you know, a little like notch on the ruler.
Yeah, mild fun.
Exactly. For you, it's going to be mind blowing. For anybody else, it's like, really? That's all? And so I trusted him and I joined a soccer team and we went out and had beers after the game and I still finished grad school. Amazingly. But you're right. That's a real fear, that if we allow compassion or kindness or fun, that we're just going to become hedonists who have no responsibility whatsoever. And we will just become drug dealers and die homeless and hurt people along the way. I mean, that's how we tend to think.
All of the things that would make us hate ourselves.
Exactly. More than we already do.
Right. Right. The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is the EMDR therapy training brainchild of Dr. Jamie Marriage, a clinician and author who's on a mission to confront stigma around mental health, trauma, and dissociation. The Institute, informed by Jamie's work, teaches a somatic, expressive, bottom-up approach to EMDR therapy that does not treat dissociation like a dirty word. ICM empowers their students to navigate dissociation as a normal response to trauma and stress when it shows up. Dr. Jamie Marriage is out and proud on various levels about her own recovery and is a strong believer in the healing capacities of EMDR therapy and helping our clients to heal from the impact of trauma. I and two of my team members have been trained by the Institute for Creative Mindfulness directly with Jamie, and I was impressed with how dissociation really was treated as just a normal aspect of trauma therapy work, which it is. Both Jamie and the consultants were matter of fact about if and when dissociation arises, it's okay, it's normal, and here's how you can help the client in that situation. The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is offering a coupon code to save 15% off any program offered by ICM. This includes their EMDR therapy basic training programs and a wide variety of their home study, advanced topics, and other CE offerings. Go to instituteforcreativemindfulness.com and use promo code 15OFF for listeners. There's a link in the show notes. You can copy the promo code and use the link right there in the show notes to make it easy.
We all know that small actions can make a big difference in our lives. I know for me, I can be in a terrible mood, go out somewhere and see a stranger, make eye contact and just smile at them and find suddenly I feel good. Whether it's practicing mindfulness a few minutes each day, movement practices, small actions can have big benefits, like how taking care of your gut can support whole body health. Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic benefits your gut, skin, and heart health in just 2 little capsules a day. Your body is an ecosystem, and great health starts in the gut. Your gut is a central hub for various pathways through the body, and a healthy gut microbiome means benefits for digestion, skin health, heart health, our immune systems, and more. Trust your gut with Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/living and use code 25LIVING to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/living, code 25LIVING.
Therapist, we've all had that moment. You wake up in the middle of the night. Oh my gosh, did I do my notes? Well, you don't have to worry about that anymore when you use Therapy Notes. Therapy Notes makes it easy to write your notes, get them done quickly, but thoroughly. My group practice has used Therapy Notes for 6 years, and everyone always finds it easy to use. But the best thing is, if you do need help, you can call their customer service number and a person answers the phone. And anytime I've ever had to use it, which is maybe 3 times in the past 6 years, my issue has been resolved easily with a cheerful demeanor in 15 minutes or less. So I highly recommend Therapy Notes. And don't forget, go to therapynotes.com and use promo code CHAT to get 2 free months. I love that you pointed out that that's that all or nothing thinking, because that, you know, it's the same with the I should. Mm-hmm. It's like there's one answer, I should be doing this. And when you say it might be a good idea, it's more like I have choices. I have options.
Exactly. And what happens often when people say it would be a good idea, you know, we're seeding into our unconscious. Wow. So, you know, when we point our unconscious in different directions, and when we say it'd be a good idea, some people immediately notice that they're starting to think, well, I could do it this way, or I could do it this way, or this might be a possibility. Or let, and it's, yeah, it's like we're letting our unconscious do the work. Once again, sneaking past the ego, because it's the unconscious, you know, searching for problem solving and idea creation to get what we actually already want to have happen. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And I can see, I mean, as you're talking about it, I can really see that, how that can be something, yeah, like tricking yourself into thinking like,
exactly,
well, I don't have to do anything. It's just an idea.
Exactly. There's no threat. It's just an idea. I don't have to act on it. I can just, you know, imagine. And the thing is, you know, when we imagine, the same neural pathways run in our brain as when we're actually doing the activity. Mm. So simply by imagining the possible things we might do, we're already running those neural pathways, creating those neural pathway patterns, which then makes it more possible and more acceptable to our ego, because then it's a known part of our experience simply because we imagined it.
Wow. Yeah. Like visualizing. That's cool.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the example I give to my clients is, like, I've got a red mug that I have to drink water when I see clients. And I say to them, think about the color red. Like, I give no other direction than just think about the color red. And they're invariably looking at everything in my room that is red. Or they're thinking about hearts. Or they're thinking about strawberries. Or, you know, their mind is coming up with red. Okay, well, think of all the red things. But I never told them that, right? I just said, think about the color red.
Yeah.
And their subconscious was immediately searching for red, either in the room or in their life. So we automatically put it to work when we do stuff like that.
That's neat. I've never used that. I didn't know about that.
Yeah. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it is. So with your book,
And I know I have a copy, so I'm asking as if I don't know anything about it.
Right. But
those who are listening may not know about it, and that's my goal, is for them to all learn. But is it a workbook style, or how's it set up?
It's a very short book, for one, because as a perfectionist, you know, I've taken a lot of programs, and I've read a gazillion books and started 13 gazillion more. Shorter is better. Like, we can look at it and go, oh, I got half an hour to sit down. Like, my book's like 46 pages. Wow. So it feels doable. And so what I do is, one, talk about how the brain works and that committee in our head that is always telling us exactly what we're doing wrong and what we should have already done and what we should be doing and blah, 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 blah. So I give us a sense of, you know, to have compassion, because there's nothing wrong with us. That's how our brain is literally designed to work. And everybody has this. So, you know, people who are hard on themselves, you know, so one, I give the compassion of, you're totally not alone. Everybody else on the planet has the same brain, which is constantly searching for danger. And that, you know, those are the people that lived back in the savannah days, when if you weren't paying attention to strange noises, you're tiger meat, right?
Yeah.
So the people were like, do you hear that noise? Wait, we have to have food for winter. Where are we going to sleep? We got to figure this. Those are the people that lived. The people are like, oh my God, it's such a nice day. I'll sit in this rock and relax. That noise, I don't know. I'm resting.
I'm going to dance, you know, in this field.
Exactly, right. Those people died. So we have the worry brains of the people who survived. And while our environment certainly has changed, our brains haven't.
Yeah.
So we are built to search for danger. And that's the ego. You know, I love the ego. It can be problematic when one of the things I say, it's a wonderful servant, but a horrible master. Mm-hmm. I mean, its job is to keep us safe and to look for driving, to look for all the possible people who might be crashing into us. And, it keeps us alive. Bless it. It just shouldn't run the show constantly. So I'm doing this very long roundabout way of describing my book. But then I give simple tools to create our awareness of what we are actually doing to ourselves, which are creating pain in us. And then I give tools to subtly and simply, and I won't say easily, it's because if we're going to change decade-old patterns, it's going to take a lot of practice to create the new neural pathways, like to create the cow paths to make up for the, you know, super highway neural pathways we have of the habits which we learn, which create our pain. So I, you know, think about our thoughts and how to be with our feelings in a way that makes them less overwhelming. Because we always think our feelings, especially feelings like anger and sorrow, are going to annihilate us. They're just going to overwhelm us, and we're going to be feeling anger and grief for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, I really hear people say that. Like, if I allow myself to feel that, I don't know if I'll live.
Exactly. And as you know, it is so powerful when they allow themselves to feel it and they survive it. It gives such a sense of capacity and a sense of safeness. It is so profound when we can be with our feelings. And, you know, we talked about Buddhism earlier, and know we are more than our feelings. Like, our thoughts and our feelings are simply parts of us. When we kind of don't, like, oh, I don't want to face them, they feel like they're bigger than us, and literally they can't be. They literally cannot be bigger than we are. We're the ones who are the containers for our thoughts and feelings. Even though sometimes they feel like they're running roughshod, they can't. Like nobody has ever, as far as I know, nobody's ever died from feeling their feelings. It feels awful a lot, but they always survived them so far. So why wouldn't they survive them again?
Yeah. And, you know, we both were talking before we started recording about trauma and its impact. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that can be helpful is to know that the trauma already happened and you,
yes,
you did get through it. You're here. So it's already, the worst part really has already happened.
Yeah.
There's no way that the emotions connected to it can hurt you more than the experience that happened, you know?
Exactly. That is so powerful. You know, when people know, oh, I actually already survived this. This is just the feelings and the memories. I survived. And that, you know, helps connect them with their capability and their survival skills. And that's powerful.
Very much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so in your book, you're saying that you help people break the feelings down into smaller pieces or more manageable.
Well, what I developed this feelings map with, and I will share this. I share the story in the book and I'll share the story here because, you know, as we said earlier, it's so good for everybody to know that everybody's human. Like, one of the reasons I love Brené Brown is she's a shame researcher and she just lays her shame out there for everyone to see. Like, you know, millions of people know about her acts that create shame in her. So, mm-hmm. So I share my story of, I signed up for a package of massage because I love massage, but it's not something I give myself a whole lot. But so I'm like, great, I'll buy a package of 3 massages. Awesome. So and they were half price. So I used one and then summer hit and I didn't want to be inside getting a massage. So I forgot about it. And then one day I'm sitting in my living room and I'm like, I wonder when that massage package expires, because it was a 6-month package. And I texted the massage therapist and said, when does that expire? And she's like, oh, next week. And I'm like, oh, crap. So I get onto her scheduling thing and there are no times that I can use my last 2 massages before it expires. And I'm like, ah. And so I proceed to beat myself up and in my own mind, blame her. So I was like, well, she should have let me know it was almost up. No, that's not her job. That's your job. Well, you should have kept track. And now I'm like, you should use them. No, I just made a mistake. I forgot. It didn't actually do anything bad. Well, she should not have a 6-month deadline. How stupid is that? No, she didn't. So I was just going back and forth of both trying to repress what I was feeling and then trying to blame somebody, whether it was me or her, for right. what I was feeling. So I was
if
feeling
it's not
like,
her fault, then it's my fault. Wait, no,
exactly.
It's not my fault, it's her fault.
Right. So I was either trying to repress it or feed it. And then I just stopped and went, I'm just angry because I lost money and I don't want to feel the anger. Because in my family, anger was not a good thing. So, you know, people got hurt when there was anger. So I don't allow, you know, I didn't allow anger. So I was like, well, I'm just angry. So I sat down on my couch and I just felt angry. I was just like, I'm angry because I lost the money. Nobody's fault. It just happened. Crap. And then after about 5 minutes, I'm like, oh, well, don't do that again. And I was done. Because rather than repressing, which keeps the feelings in our body and in our psyche, or feeding, which if we're trying to release the feelings, it just keeps more coming in, like more anger, more blame. So it just keeps building it up. Versus when we just sit down and, as you said, pay attention to our body, feel the feelings in our body, they literally, like, they flow and they finish. Our body's response, yes. You know, the neurochemical response is done, I've read, anywhere between 90 seconds to 2 minutes. Our body's neurochemical response to an event or a thought is done. 90 seconds to 2 minutes. So if we're still feeling it, we're either repressing or feeding, right?
Well, yeah. So the feeding part, though, I'm curious about that, because I have heard that if you allow the feeling, it moves through. And I've always heard like 45 to 90 seconds, but still another 30 seconds on top of that. It's still...
I've gotten manageable. Down to 5 minutes. That's the fastest I've gotten to.
All right. Well, that's where you are right now. That's okay.
Right.
Well, I'm here saying I've heard. there have been a few times that I've really fully let the feelings that I was repressing move through. But,
yeah.
You know, other times I'm like, okay, I can't. No more. Yeah. You know, I've got to make this stop. So, I mean, it's hard.
Mm-hmm. It is hard. It's really hard. And you're right. They just, when we feel them, they flow and we release them.
Yeah.
Now,
it feels so relieving.
Yeah. And I don't want to create the sense that, like, well, if you feel it once, you're done. And if you aren't done with that same thing, well, then you screwed up. It was like, you know, we release that amount that we're feeling for that moment. So we've released some. There's probably a lot more, especially when we're talking about trauma. It's a lot of releasing. Yeah. But every time we do, it's a little bit of releasing. We have a little more space in ourselves for something other than the whatever pain we're feeling. Once again, sneaking past the ego.
Right. In a manageable amount.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we're going to feel as much as we need to feel, as is there to feel, as time allows. I know for me, you know, I deal with stuff on a certain level. I'm like, yay, I'm all done. And then it comes back and I'm like, oh. And what I realized is that I'm just dealing at a deeper level. I've cleared what was available to be cleared before. And now it's like, oh, we're getting to the deeper stuff. Right. Okay. So let's be with this. And as you said, we've already survived the original trauma. We're just releasing more of it.
Right. And I'm grateful that you said that about clearing what's there and then getting into what's deeper in there. Because, you know, I often have talked about spiritual bypass on the podcast before. And, you know, sometimes you hear people say, yeah, I cleared that, you know, my anger about it, you know, and they're talking about it in a way where it was something like that would have a lasting impact. And the talking about clearing it sounds like it just was like in an hour or something. And it's like,
yeah,
you know, I think that oversimplifies and again, can make us be critical of ourselves thinking we're doing it wrong.
Exactly.
Because we still feel some anger, you know, even though we might have felt relieved after releasing whatever we released, then later, you know, there's more anger and it's like, oh, wait, what did I do wrong here?
I know. I screwed up again.
Yeah. I'm not getting it. I know I should be over this, right?
Right. I already worked on this for an hour.
Right.
I had a therapy session about this.
Right. That was last week.
Right.
Next time we're moving on, but
you're right.
Yeah. And then we start the should again.
Uh-huh.
Well, should be it's past this. I know how to do it, you know,
right. Especially as therapists. I don't know about you, but I have a big, like, I'm a therapist. This should not be happening to me. I should know better. You know, it's like, when I'm human too, you know?
Yep. Yep. And I, you know, and I've talked to many therapists who say, I'm a relationship therapist and I'm having problems in my own relationship, or I'm a child therapist and I don't know what to do with my child's problem. And, you know, it's like, nobody said that we are supposed to be like not humans.
Right.
Somehow we tell ourselves that, but that's, again, that's the perfectionism.
Yeah. That's not part of the rule book that we have to be.
Thankfully.
Right.
Since
nobody would be a therapist.
Exactly. Or only the best fakers.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, huh?
I know. I don't want to start thinking about that.
Yeah. Well, we'll just repress that one for right now.
Yeah, let's push that aside. So, Jane, I know we are going to have to stop in a minute, but I appreciate you telling us about your work and giving us a few glimpses of what's in your book. I know that people will likely want to learn more about your work and your book. So where can they find you and everything you're doing?
Awesome. So the best way to find me is on my website, everydaylove.me. And I must admit, I love that title.
That is so sweet.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Well, .com costs like $4,500. And I'm like, but .me was like $30, and I'm like, that's even better. So
$4,500 or $30. Hard choice, but I think I know what I'm gonna do.
I know. And everydaylove.me, it's like, oh, that's just so perfect. So anyway, that's my website. On Facebook, I'm under Everyday Love, and it's three separate words. So those are the two best ways to reach me. If you wanna, you can always sign up. You get a free copy of my book if you go to my website and sign up. And then if you want to continue receiving notes from me, I send out about a monthly guide for tools and just ways of thinking and being aware to help us be kinder to ourselves and reduce our stress.
Wonderful. Yeah. Free copy, and all they have to do is sign up for your website. So, hey, jump on that, everybody. Well, Jane, it's been lovely talking to you.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Thanks so much for listening to my interview with Jane. I hope you took away some ideas about how you might be able to be a little kinder to yourself, give yourself more compassion in your life. I think it's something that we always can strive to do better with. I know for me, I try to focus on it, but when life gets crazy, sometimes it completely slips off my radar. So I was glad to talk with Jane today. As always, thank you for listening to Therapy Chat, and I'll look forward to being back in your earbuds soon. Take care. Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now, for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today. Just another reminder that if you'd like to become a member of Therapy Chat, supporting the podcast while receiving fun member perks and being able to communicate with me one-on-one, go to patreon.com/therapychat. If every subscriber donated just $1 per month, Therapy Chat would be able to keep going strong indefinitely. Thanks so much for your support.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Regan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.